number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You know the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Glad you can be with us. It's hour number two here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we take you through the night tonight. Our telephone number to join the program is 800-777-2907. Coming up, Ben Kirchable is going to join us, another one of our college football previews. This time it's the ACC. Now, do you remember when the ACC was Florida State and like everybody else? Those days are kind of over. You know, Clemson is playing pretty good. They've got Pitt now in the conference. Louisville has had its moments. North Carolina has played pretty well. We got a good year from Duke just a couple of years ago. So the ACC can put a scare into you, and they're going to have media days coming up on Thursday in Charlotte. Now, don't get me wrong. It's still Florida State and Clemson. But nevertheless, some of the teams have been risen up a little bit. And it's really, really impressive, especially what Dabo Swinney has been doing at Clemson. So we'll get Ben Kirchable's take on this coming up in about 30 minutes, so you don't want to miss that. We've also got something interesting coming up in our second segment of the night. We're going to do during the regular season, we do top five and bottom five of the NFL, our top five teams after week one, two, three, and our bottom five teams. But I like to keep that theme going a little bit. And yesterday we had a really cool Twitter exchange with some of you on the storylines in the NFL that you're looking forward to seeing play out. It could be positive or negative. But if you're curious how a team is going to play or a player is going to play or how that coaching angle is going to, a new coach in a situation, whatever the storyline may be, we were asking what storyline are you looking forward to seeing this upcoming season? And a number of you sent some really good stuff. So in this upcoming segment, in the next segment of the show, we're going to do the top five player storylines to watch that we feel we want to watch out for. And again, these could be good or bad. If you bring up a player, it doesn't mean you're thinking that they're going to be a Pro Bowler. It may be that they're in a precarious situation and you're just kind of interested in how they're going to react to a coaching change or a new wide receiver or a new defensive coordinator or whatever it is. And there's kind of no right or wrong answer to it. It's just personal thoughts on Adam and I, and you certainly can join in as well at Twitter at Tony D Radio. So get your thought process going on that. These top players storylines that you're looking forward to seeing play out in this upcoming NFL season. Now, if you've listened to the show a number of times, you know that I really, really enjoy what Jim Harbaugh is doing at Michigan. This latest rap video is fantastic. Now, here's the deal about my kind of man crush on Jim Harbaugh. The reason I like Jim Harbaugh so much is that I think he brings this enthusiastic angle to college football that it should be there. You want your coaches to have a good time. You want your coaches to really love being where they're at. And that's what I get with him all the time. Whether he's challenging Nick Saban on satellite camps or he's recruiting in certain spots where he's not supposed to, bringing some fire back into Michigan rivalries. Jim Harbaugh has been great for college football. I just think he's been outstanding. So when I saw this video, this rap video that he's in, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I think this is what makes him so endearing, because he's this hip. He wants to connect with players in any way he possibly can. And let me tell you a little thing about Jim Harbaugh from his playing days. When Jim Harbaugh was in Indianapolis playing for the Colts, they played the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 1995 season AFC Championship game. So January of 96. This is the year the Steelers went to the Super Bowl and lost to the Dallas Cowboys. Now, Indianapolis under Harbaugh was not supposed to beat the Steelers that year. The Steelers were, Bill Cowher had yet another awesome team that ran through the season, had home field advantage, and Indianapolis was kind of an upstart, decent enough team, but should not have gone into Three Rivers and be competitive in that AFC title game. And yet they were, and Aaron Bailey was the wide receiver that Harbaugh threw a Hail Mary into the end zone, and it landed on Bailey's chest and rolled off. Gave me a heart attack, by the way. It was an incomplete pass, and the Steelers went on to the Super Bowl and their first Super Bowl appearance since Super Bowl 14. So it was a long time for the Steelers to get back to that game. But after the game, this is where I really started to like Harbaugh as just a person. After the game, Harbaugh was speaking about the loss. And it was devastating. I mean, they were in the game the whole time and looked like they were going to pull it out. And he threw this pass that should have been caught. I mean, Bailey should have caught it. And afterwards, he said, you know, they were expecting Peter McNeely to come out, but instead they got Mike Tyson. And he just had this smile. And I remember thinking, that's cool. That's cool that he could still be that, he could still have that personality even after a really, really tough loss. Now, don't get me wrong. Harbaugh is intense. I mean, Harbaugh, you watched him in San Francisco. You even saw a little bit of it at Stanford. He's an intense guy, but he's really got a good personality. This "Who's Got It Better Than Us" video is great. I don't even know who the artist is. Is it Bailey that's in this? Is that the rapper in this one? It's a great video. He's really good in it. So I got to say this, another win for Jim Harbaugh. Eventually, I wonder if we'll start turning on him when it's a little too much, when it looks like it's pandering. But right now, it's not pandering. It's very, very good. He's very, very good. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. All right, Big 12 Media Days wrapped up on Tuesday in Dallas. And of course, every team had its chance to talk. Every team had a chance to talk about its players, talk about its season, talk about the direction their team is going. Everybody's optimistic. Everybody's excited. That's what Media Days are all about. But Jim Grobe, who has the unenviable task of being the spokesperson for Baylor, who, because he's the interim head coach replacing Art Briles, had it really rough. Because Jim Grobe came in to sort of be the Band-Aid for the football program. Art Briles was let go after some cover-up on some sexual abuse and sexual assault allegations by football players, where women came and reported this, and it was swept under the rug, and Baylor did this a number of times, and there needed to be a cleaning of the house. And there was a cleaning of the house. So they're looking for a new coach, but they sort of need to keep the ship floating a little bit. So they brought in Jim Grobe to sort of take over. Now, he may be the permanent coach down the line, but right now he has an interim tag until they find that permanent guy. However, part of this deal was him getting up and talking about Baylor and either making an excuse for it or talking about going forward. And he did a good job to a point. Now, I'll get back to when he didn't do a good job, but he did a good job to a point, sort of reminding people who were asking him questions, you know, this wasn't on my watch, so I can't really speak to some of the stuff that went on, but I do know we have good kids here. We don't have a cultural problem. All of those things where he's looking ahead. But he made a mistake when he clumsily explained that they don't have a bad culture at Baylor, that they didn't have a bad culture at Baylor. And this is where Media Days can get you in trouble, because it's tough when you're up there and you're getting peppered and you're trying to talk on the fly and you're trying to get your words out, and then you stumble. And look, I do this show 15 hours a week I do this show. There are times where I do a monologue, for example, where I'm going in the wrong direction, and next thing I know, I'm all over the place. And that's just part of this job. So I can understand if you're doing press conferences, when you get off track, whoops, you're going to say some things you're going to regret. It's like being on a political campaign. But if I was Baylor, and this is where I think they sort of failed him in a way, if I was Baylor, I would have really made sure that Jim Grobe was trained like a politician for a debate, because you knew that it was going to be hostile. The media really wanted its pound of flesh in this. This was a bad, bad, bad situation at Baylor. There's a lot of outrage for it. We as a society are done with the whole "it's football and nothing" culture. We're done with that. When our girls are going to college and they're being sexually assaulted and sexually, abused by football players, and no one is doing anything about it because it's a football thing, you wouldn't understand, then we've had enough of that. And Grobe had to be the sacrificial lamb at Media Days today in Dallas, because he's now the face of the football team. And they were not going to let Baylor get away with, "Hey, we don't want to talk about the past." They didn't want Baylor to pull a Mark McGwire. We're not here to talk about the past. We're talking about going forward. We've got a really good team. We're really excited about what the upcoming season can bring for us. And, you know, it's going to be a tough conference. It always is. We're ready for the challenge. This is the guys that are going to step up, blah, blah, blah. The media wasn't going to have it. This was their chance to hit Baylor and hit hard. So Grobe got, you know, he got some questions, and he didn't handle it as well. I don't necessarily blame him. He's again an unenviable task of being the face of a franchise, quote unquote, that nobody wants to, you know, be in the troubling times in Waco. However, they needed to handle that better. To say there was not a cultural problem at Baylor is 1,000% wrong.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, this is going to be interesting. Our top 10 player storylines for the upcoming season. Again, this is, you know, kind of no right or wrong answers. These are all personal. But players who are coming in with something either to prove or a certain situation, and you're kind of curious, how is that going to play out? So Adam and I have come up with our top 5 player storylines for the NFL season. If you'd like to chip in with yours, hit me up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, and I will be glad to share it. Okay, do you have any honorable mentions before we get started? I had a whole bunch of these.
Yeah.
And so I thought I'd give a little time for some honorable mentions.
I didn't write them down, but I mean, there was a bunch that I thought of, you know, guys like Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, exactly.
Personally for me, Alshon Jeffrey and the plan on the franchise tag.
And I had Sam Bradford.
Yes, Bradford.
And I had RG3 just to see if he's actually this bad.
Yeah, I had Bradford and Wentz kind of combined.
And I had Jared Goff with the Rams.
Yeah.
If he's going to start, if he's going to play, what is that like? He's the face of the franchise. And I also had Dante Fowler. I wanted to see how he was going to perform.
Yes, he popped in my head as well.
Yeah, I just, you know, with taking that, you know, tearing an ACL, he was drafted high. They had high expectations. He lost the entire season. And now he's coming back sort of fresh. It's almost like getting a second first-round pick in the draft because he missed all of last season. So I'm kind of curious how he's going to play out. All right, so let's get to our top 5 player storylines for 2016. My number 5 on my list is personal to me, really personal to me, and it's Jadeveon Clowney in Houston. And the reason is I just feel like Jadeveon Clowney has not played to the level I thought he was going to play when he was drafted. He has been injured. He has suffered a lot of injuries. And I don't want to say it's a make or break year. He's still young and he can still come around. But I got a feeling that this is the year where you go, yeah, this is pretty much what you're going to get from him.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. He's been in the league now long enough and he's seemingly healthy. That's all I keep hearing down here in Houston is he's healthy. And he's ready to take that next step along with J.J. Watt on that defensive line. And it's time for him to go.
Yeah, and I don't want everybody – I don't want all the naysayers to be right, okay? I just don't
right.
I don't want Merrill Hodge to be right. All of the people who thought Houston was an idiot for passing up on Khalil Mack or whatever scenario for that draft that they were supposed to trade the pick or something like that. And he's a South Carolina guy. I really want him to do well. I really want him to be the pick that you say, yeah, that was the right guy at the right time. He finally came around once he got healthy. But like I said, I just think with Clowney – If he's healthy and has an okay year, you know, a good year but not great, I think that's pretty much all you're going to get from him. And I think that's that. I wonder if 2016 becomes like a watershed year for him. All right, you're number 5.
My number 5. I'm sticking with the same team, but it's Brock Osweiler, quarterback.
Good one, yeah.
Because if he comes in and he can be a stable force at quarterback that stays healthy and plays all the games, there's enough weapons on that offense. And as good as the defense is, they could be in the playoffs again and be a, I don't want to say dangerous team, but a semi-dangerous team because the defense should be good again.
My number 4 is DeMarco Murray, running back at Tennessee. I'm curious because, boy, Mariota needs a running game badly. He got sacked a lot last year. He was kind of a... He was taken down, and not that Tennessee is the guy that's going to take them to the playoffs or whatnot, but after that year in Dallas that he had, and then went to Philadelphia, and that didn't work out. Again, DeMarco Murray could slip into the sort of the afterthought of the NFL if back-to-back teams don't work out. But most importantly, Tennessee needs a running back. They need a running game, and. This I'm looking to see what he can contribute to a team that is trying to win 6 or 7 games to sort of get out of that really, really awful category.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see the dynamic between him and Mariota. That's where I'm looking at that, just to see such a young guy looking at a veteran back, and it should be able to be a almost a safety blanket for him.
Give him the ball.
My number four is staying at the same position as the other one. It's Kirk Cousins in Washington playing on the franchise tag. Can he? Because that's a lot of pressure to duplicate what you did to get to this point to be franchised and get your big contract.
Yeah, and you know what? That's a good pick because with the Redskins last year, they were a beneficiary of not having a team run away with the division,
right?
Because that was mediocre. So yeah, one of those teams has to make the playoffs, and it happened to be the Redskins. How much of it was Kirk Cousins playing really well, and can he keep that up? You know what? There were a lot of criticism, and you know it may be nitpicking, but boy, he played really well against the bad teams,
yeah,
but
yes,
not so well against the good teams. And so now you have to take it to that next step where you beat some of the good teams, where you really start saying, hey, when we play against some of the top teams in the NFL, I can hold my own. We may not win all the games, but we're going to hold our own enough to show that I belong as one of these $20 million quarterbacks. My number three pick is a quarterback. This is the first time I've taken a quarterback, and that's Derek Carr in Oakland. I hope the Raiders take that next step just because I like the way they've built it. I like the way the Raiders have built it. And Derek Carr is the guy. So if he plays well and the Raiders do take that next step, he's responsible. We've had Marcos Bertone on a number of times to talk about the Raiders. The kids got superstar written all over them. They love him there. They're all excited about him and all excited about his future. So this 2016 is just where I want to see it.
My number three, I went with a combo because it's two players that are kind of coming back from the same thing. It's Jamal Charles and Le'Veon Bell, both coming back from big injuries.
Yeah, that's right.
And their teams are expected to compete for division titles, if not Super Bowls. So can they both come back 100% healthy and be the guys they were before? And this isn't Charles' first devastating injury. He's tore his Achilles. He's had knee problems before. So I just want to see how those two guys come back because they're still young enough. And they're so skilled that they should be able to do what they did before.
All right, my number two player storyline that I'm interested in 2016. It's going to be brief, and we probably won't hear about him after the month of September, but it's Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yep.
he has a chance to really put the Patriots in a real bind by playing poorly in the first four games of the season. Look, the Patriots really are driven by Brady. Some of their things, they're not a complete awesome team. You know, their defense is susceptible at times. And if you're Jimmy Garoppolo, Brady can handle it if you go 2-2. Brady certainly can handle it if you go 3-1. But if you go 1-3 and 0-4, that might be a hole he can't climb out of.
Yeah.
And so for me, this is the guy I'm really watching for the first month of the season. If he's bad, if he really can't play that well in that position, the Patriots may not win the division, no matter what Brady can do. Because Brady's not going to win them all when he gets back. And so if you go 0-4 and Brady loses two, now you're 10-6, and that still might win the division because it might
right.
be bad. But don't take your chances. Don't take your chances. So that's my number two.
My number two, I'm going to the same team as Derek Carr, but it's Khalil Mack.
You
kind of mentioned him with Clowney. I think Mack, this is the year. He had a breakout year last year, but this is where he really puts himself on the map. I think he wins Defensive Player of the Year, finally unseats J.J. Watt. And I'm just expecting huge things. So I just think he's going to be a storyline all year long, maybe pushing for that sack record.
All right, my number one player storyline to watch, Ezekiel Elliott of the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys are coming into this season. If they get a healthy Tony Romo, the running back position, it was so important in the year that they went to the playoffs and almost beat Green Bay. He's got to be somewhat productive. And now he's very, very popular. We got a story about his jersey sales. There's a lot of optimism in Dallas if they can stay healthy, and I think that he's involved in it. I'm really curious to see what the Dallas running game will look like with that great offensive line, Romo healthy, integral part of Dallas's success. You're number one real quick.
Andrew Luck. Can he come back and be Andrew Luck? He needs to be that franchise quarterback he was selected to be.
You get the money, you better play.
Keep going.
You better play. All right, those were our top five. What are yours? Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. But coming up next, Ben Kirchival, ACC Media Day is coming up soon.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us. Continuing our college football media day previews, the ACC media days will be going to North Carolina and Charlotte in about a day or two. And it used to be a time where the ACC was Florida State and everybody else, but over the last couple of years, last year Clemson played for a national title. We've seen Duke play well, North Carolina play well. They've added teams to the conference. So now ACC football, where do we stand with it in 2016? Ben Kirchival joins us from CBSSports.com to help us give a preview on this conference. How are you, Ben?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. All right. So I want to start off with Florida State and Clemson. I mean, a lot of people look at Clemson. They played for the national title. Dabo Sweeney is doing great things. And they have Deshaun Watson. But Florida State's always loaded. How close are these two teams when you're making predictions for the preseason?
Really close. Probably a lot closer than maybe the polls might predict a little bit later this week during the media days. Obviously, when you talk about Clemson, you're talking about that offense, right? Deshaun Watson coming back. And they bring back basically that entire supporting cast around him. And plus, you think about it this way, they're also getting Mike Williams back this year. The wide receiver basically missed all of last season. They consider him a first-round draft pick, and he's coming back. So that offense can be all-time good. And actually, I think it can be so good that it can break the FBS record for points in a season, which was held by Florida State in 2013. But you move over to the Seminoles, and I think that they have – some questions heading into the season, but I think that those questions can be answered. Really, you look back to last season, inconsistencies at quarterback, namely that really struggled in the passing game, pass protection. I think if guys like Travis Rudolph can really step up at that wide receiver spot, get some more consistency in their pass blocking up front, I think that passing game can really start to catch up with what they have in Dalvin Cook in the run game. And then you look on the other side of the ball, and I think this is where Florida State actually has the edge over Clemson. They have a lot of experience coming back on defense. Have Derwin James, one of the top safeties in the country. He's only going to be a sophomore. He's still a really young kid. They got some really great guys returning along that defensive front seven, some guys who could have gone to the NFL are coming back. So, and then on top of that, Florida State's going to get Clemson at home this year. That's been a really heated game over the past few years, fighting for that division. So I think people look at Clemson, obviously, as the favorites to repeat in the ACC, get back to the playoff, maybe get back to the championship. But I would not look too far past Florida State either. This is a team that, in a rebuilding mode, still won 10 games a year ago.
Dabo Sweeney, and you don't build a champion overnight. It takes years of getting in recruits, but he's done so in a time where South Carolina was pretty decent. Steve Spurrier was kind of owning the state. SEC was dominating college football. How impressive has it been for Dabo to slowly build that team up to the power that they are now, given where Clemson actually is located on a map?
Well, it's impressive on a couple of levels. You mentioned the rise of South Carolina and what Steve Spurrier did. It starts from the fact that as a state, South Carolina doesn't have a lot of recruits. I mean, they have some, and they've gotten some really big in-state recruits over the years. Jadeveon Clowney, Marcus Lattimore, these were in-state products that ended up going to Columbia and being a part of that whole turnaround at South Carolina where they won 11 games for three straight years, which was, for them, pretty historically great. So for Clemson to recruit well in-state, and then you start plucking some of those guys from Georgia and Florida, guys who are going to come in, make an immediate impact for your program. Deshaun Watson was a Georgia product. Deion Kane, I think, was a Florida product. So they're getting those guys. And I mentioned Mike Williams a couple of seconds ago. He was a South Carolina product. So they've been able to do it kind of in all of those areas, surrounding states, in-state. And then on top of that, Dabo Sweeney's he's hired really great assistants. Brent Venables came in from Oklahoma. He's turned out to be one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, just reloaded every single year, had that historically great defense in 2014 for that program, and then they turned right back around. Fielder's another really great defense. They're going to have to do it again this year because of all the attrition to the NFL, doing really great things on the offensive side of the ball. Robbie Caldwell's former head coach at Vanderbilt. He's now the offensive line coach, so they've got some experience there. So he's done it from an assistant coaching staff perspective. He's done it from a recruiting perspective. And then on top of that, they've just been consistent. I mean, the whole rap on Clemson for years was Clemsoning, losing the games late in the season they weren't supposed to lose. Now they're going out and they're winning games against Ohio State and Georgia and competing toe-to-toe with Alabama. I mean, this is not the Clemson program that we've known over the years.
Ben Kercheval joins us, CBSSports.com, on the ACC as they begin media days on Thursday in Charlotte. Mark Richt is now the new head coach at Miami, and he inherits Brad Kaya. From a perspective of where the Hurricanes are and how he can turn that around, is it going to take some time, or does he have really something strong to build right away?
He has some talent. Kaya is a really special kid. I think Kaya's ceiling can get a lot higher with Mark Richt there. Working directly under him and his son there at the quarterback spot, quarterback coaching, I think that his ceiling can get a lot higher. Right now, you look at the ACC, and as far as quarterbacks go, people want to talk about Deshaun Watson, and there's obviously a lot of good reason for that. Watson is a Heisman candidate. He had over 4,000 yards total offense last year. He's just a really prolific player, probably going to be a number one overall pick next year in the draft. But I think Kaya this year, as a junior, can elevate himself to at least being in the conversation for that number two spot. He has all the tools. He has a great arm. He has a lot of playing experience. I think his decision-making has really improved over time. He just has to continue working on those little things. But physically speaking, he has everything he needs to be a top-tier quarterback in college football. I think if he's in the right offense that allows him to throw the ball around, allows him to put up big numbers, he'll start being talked about in that real upper echelon of college quarterbacks this year. Watson, Baker Mayfield, Josh Rosen, guys like that. Because right now you're looking at across the board in college football, this is a very running back heavy year in the sport. So there's room for Kaya to elevate himself and make a name for himself.
That'd be some good company. We talked about the Atlantic. Let's talk about the Coastal. Who's the favorite coming out of there?
Coastal? I think North Carolina probably has a really great chance to repeat. They have to answer some questions at quarterback. I think they have the opportunity to do that. But offense is going to be really potent again. So North Carolina is an interesting team there. I think Pitt has that capability to be really good. James Conner is finally getting over his cancer treatment. They expect him to be back at some point this year. Hopefully early on, that would be a really incredible story for them. Pat Narduzzi has a really underrated team there, I think. Now, they lose Tyler Boyd, who, from a receiver standpoint, really underrated in the ACC a year ago, counted for a lot of offense in that passing game. But I think with Peterson there at quarterback, has the ability to throw the ball deep. That would really complement what James Conner can do in that physical running game. Pitt would be one of those interesting teams that I would look out for because this is, of the two, this is definitely a more wide open.
A similar question that I asked you earlier about Mark Richt, I want to ask about Justin Fuente. How good of a hire was that for Virginia Tech? And kind of the same idea, is that going to take some time to get the Hokies back up?
It was a really great hire. You know, the other great part of that hire was keeping Bud Foster around.
Sure,
and that's a real rare thing in hiring these days. A lot of times you'll get the new head coach come in, he cleans house with the staff. He might keep a couple of guys around, but he's generally going to clean staff, come in, do his own thing. But with Foster, you know, Frank Beamer was synonymous with Virginia Tech football. I mean, that goes without saying. The guy is one and the same with the Hokies. Everything that we know about Virginia Tech today comes from Frank Beamer. But Buff Foster was a really big part of that as well. And you could even say, if there was a Mount Rushmore of Virginia Tech players and coaches, I would even say that Foster as an assistant probably deserves a place on that, just for being there with Beamer for all of those years, doing the whole lunch pail thing, strong defenses. That's just what Virginia Tech's known for. And for Fuente to keep him on, and for Foster to agree to that. Remember, Foster wanted that job as much as anybody. So for him to swallow his pride a little bit and decide to stay on as an assistant, have some continuity within the program, that helps Fuente in recruiting. That helps him with the personnel that he has right now coming onto the field. So I think that he can build a consistent winner here in the next 3 to 4 years. I think he's shown that in his ability to build up Memphis from the ground up. So I have no doubts about his ability to get Virginia Tech back to the ACC championship game here in a few years. I just think a really big part of that was keeping Foster on board, too.
Ben Kercheval, CBSSports.com. ACC Media Days start on Thursday in Charlotte. Great preview, my friend. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, buddy. Take care.
All right, coming up next, the more popular NFL jersey has been released for the month of April. And yes, it's one of the more popular teams, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio.
and YahooSportsRadio.com.
Another tribute to the late Gary Marshall, who passed away on Tuesday at the age of 81. Television icon, creator of Happy Days, and this little ditty, Laverne and Shirley, starring his sister, Penny Marshall, and Cindy Williams. It was a spinoff of Happy Days. It was set in Milwaukee. It later moved to California. There was The Big Ragu. There was Lenny and Squiggy. And by the way, to trap it back into sports, I bet you didn't know this, Adam. Have you ever watched Laverne and Shirley? Because you're a young guy.
Yeah, I've seen
it. Squiggy is a baseball scout.
Really?
I actually been in the press box with Squiggy. He was just scouting the baseball games in Denver. He's great, by the way. He's really nice. He has no problem talking about the television show. He loves baseball. He will talk baseball with you. He was really cool. I mean, and you know how like guys want to do something else with their lives and they're kind of like, yeah, I don't want to talk about that acting thing. I'm an entrepreneur. Or I want to be known for this. I'm a politician now. He had no problems going, man, Laverne and Shirley was great. It was fun. I had a good time. So he's really, really cool guy.
That is cool.
Yeah, so he's a baseball scout. So Gary Marshall, who created all that, is passed away at the age of 81. Fantastic. Just fun shows back in the 70s and 80s. Real fun. That show, Laverne and Shirley, was I liked that too as a kid. I didn't like it when they moved to California. I thought that was dumb. But Cindy's boyfriend, I can't barely remember the show. I remember Lenny and Squiggy. Carmine. That was right. Carmine was the boxer dancer that dated Shirley. And he was the big ragu because he was a boxer. Steven in Ohio wants to chime in on our top five player storylines for 2016. 800-777-2907. What's on your mind, Steven?
Hey, Tony. First off, now I'm going to have to go skip down the street to the Laverne and Shirley theme.
That's right.
Stuck in my head the rest of the night.
That's right.
I appreciate that. But a couple players, and I tried to think a little bit more outside of the box. As an Ohio guy, I'm a lot of Bengal stuff. But with my Ohio State Buckeyes putting 12 guys into the NFL draft a couple months ago,
yeah,
kind of
right.
Hard not to look at a couple of those. And there's some, mainly Von Bell is one that I'm really looking at as somebody that may help the New Orleans Saints, a team that I think they allowed the most points in the NFL last year.
Yeah, their defense was atrocious.
It was up there in their most that they've ever allowed as far as a franchise. And Von Bell is a guy that can come in, I think, and make a major impact in that secondary, being a major playmaker. So I think that's going to be a big, big hit for the New Orleans Saints.
Do you guys remember the game against the Giants? Hold on, Steven.
And being drafted number three, I think you have to look at Joey Bosa as being a big impact player for the Chargers. I think he goes in there, he starts, and I think any team that plays against the Chargers, they're going to look at Bosa and put a lot of focus on him. So I think that should open up a lot of the other part of the defensive line and give some time for some of the other defensive backs to get into the backfield. I think their defense should be bumped up a little bit just with the addition of Bosa there.
Were you happy that I picked Ezekiel Elliott number one? I mean, that's all right. He can't hear me, so I got to.
Yeah, he must not be able to hear you or something.
He cannot hear me because I interrupted him twice. Do you remember that New Orleans Saints New York Giants game last year with
yeah,
where it was like it was really fun to watch, but you felt like you were watching something perverse. Like you were like, there's no defense here. This is an arena football game in the National Football League.
They just kept throwing it over the top every time.
Remember that? It was so hard to watch because at this one moment, you're like, this is really exciting, man. This is really good, like, offense. But you're like, the defenses for both teams were terrible. Absolutely terrible. He's right about Ohio State. A lot of Ohio State guys in the NFL.
I think that game was when I was at the Titans-Texans game last year.
Oh, that's right. That high-scoring game.
Because I remember watching it on the thing, and they kept showing highlight after highlight after
just,
highlight of touchdowns.
It's just incredible. Just incredible. And that's kind of like those of us who watch a particular sport, there's always that one game where you're like, I shouldn't be enjoying this. Like this takes the spirit of the sport and flushes it down the toilet. It's like when you watch a Major League Baseball game and it's 14-12. You're like, this shouldn't happen. Like this, you know, but you kind of go, all right, it's an anomaly. So it's kind of fun. Hockey game that's like 7-6. But this was just just an, it was, again, it was arena football for the New Orleans Saints. All right, 800-777-2907. I had Ezekiel Elliott my number one storyline because I know the Cowboys need a running game. And, you know, they were so successful with that 2 years ago. And a lot of it's going to be on, you know, seeing how the rookie does. He's got the number one selling jersey in April. So I have this question. I might carry this over in the next hour. Would you buy a rookie, an unproven rookie's jersey right off the bat? Like if the Bears drafted a, you know, they were in the top five and they took a big name college football player. And you didn't have any attachment to him, meaning he didn't go to Michigan or he wasn't anybody you rooted for. He was a guy from like Alabama. Would you buy his jersey that early in his career?
No.
I wouldn't either. Absolutely I wouldn't either. But is Elliott's jersey is not only the best-selling jersey of all rookies, it's the best-selling jersey since April. Now, Frank Schwab points out, hey, look, he's beating out Aaron Rodgers and J.J. Watt, but the reality is those guys have been in the league a long time, so they've sold their jerseys. So, like, pretty much if you wanted it, if you really wanted a J.J. Watt jersey, chances are you bought it before April. So, he, you know, Schwab's point, and it's well taken, that if you're going to do a sort of a who's got the number one jersey since the draft, chances are it's going to be new guys with, you know, new jerseys that are out. But still, Ezekiel Elliott, that's a great, that's pretty cool. Number one jersey since April. That's a lot of pressure, man. That's a lot of pressure. The guy's, he hasn't even ran 1 second in the NFL yet. And he's already got the top selling jersey since April. Pretty remarkable. To be honest with you, you know who I thought would have the number one jersey in April, since April? Jared Goff. You're opening up a brand new market. No one has Rams jerseys yet. Or at least they didn't. Jared Goff. If you're in LA and you're looking for a Rams jersey to support your new team, that's the guy you'd grab. Or maybe Todd Gurley. I don't know. Yahoo Sports Radio.